This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
The Boardwalk Audio Podcast.
Oh my good gracious. Hello and good news. This is the podcast where we talk about the people, places, and current events that are affecting the world in a positive way. And I am your podcast host, Hannah Cannongator. This week's guest is James Mastriani. James is on the UCB main stage team, Outside Dog. They have a show every Tuesday night at 10:30 p.m. at UCB Sunset called Outside Dog Gets One Star. They look up one-star reviews on Yelp and do improv off of it, and it's so dang funny. They also have a show Saturday night, May 23rd at 9 p.m. So if you're like, 10:30 is too late, then hit up that 9 p.m., baby! James is also a fellow podcast host. He has a great podcast I listen to all the time called I'm Too Effing High. He brings on fellow comedians and tries to answer the question each week, are comedians funnier when they're high? And I'll give you a hint, it's very, very funny. You can find that on iTunes or whatever your podcast listening machinery of choice is. And it's released every Tuesday. Speaking of iTunes, if you like the podcast, this podcast, but also if you listen to James's podcast and you like his, please rate and review. Do it for every podcast you like. It's the best way to help those podcasts get a little more traffic and bumped up on the search results. And if while you're rating, you're like, hey, this rating system reminds me a lot of Amazon reviews, I'd love to shop on Amazon. Well, you can by using my link and going to boardwalkaudio.com/helloandgoodnews and clicking the Support Our Artist button. That will take you to Amazon, and you can shop, shop, shop all you want, and it'll all be normal, and then they'll put little pennies back into the little pockets of Boardwalk Audio. All right, that's enough shameless little promotions, and let's talk about some good news.
Good news. Good news. Good news. Good news. Good news. Good news. Hello. Good news. I think it's time we had some frickin' real good news.
Okay, let's start. Here I am with James. We're on my red couch.
Yeah, James. We are. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here.
Yeah.
Happy Tuesday.
Yeah. Yeah. I just spent a little bit of time petting your cat. Mm-hmm. It was the first time I think I've ever, because I grew up with dogs, and I don't think I've ever had a cat openly let me pet his belly before.
Yeah.
And your cat was like loving it.
Yeah.
It was great.
He like rolls over like a dog would, and he's very stoked on.
Yeah, he's very dog like. I like that.
He'll probably hop up here at some point.
Yeah,
later too.
Yeah. Is that identity politics? Like talking about, you know, is it wrong that I prefer cats that act like dogs?
Interesting.
Yeah, you know, is that some sort of like? I wonder how your cat would feel about me saying that I liked him because he acted like a dog.
Because he acted like a dog.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like those racist white guys who are like, they only like black people that they think act white.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Maybe this is a version of Get Out and my cat is just
dog. I think what I'm saying is there's a chance that maybe I'm racist, but to animals.
Sure.
Not to people, but to animals. Yeah. I want all animals to be dogs, basically. Yeah.
Well, you recognize it. That's always
and that's how you can change. Yeah. That's right. That is how you change.
I feel like shitty cats give cats a bad name, though.
Yeah.
Which, again, goes back to, I mean, maybe all cats are chill and you've just had experiences with cats that were not as chill.
Yeah, I think that is the word for it, too, is like my experience with some cats, and maybe it's also the age as well, has been that like they've never really seemed like they wanted anything to do with me.
Yeah.
And so for me, I'm always like, why? What's the point? What's the point of having a cat that like doesn't want to hang out with me?
Yeah.
But then there's a cat like Dude, your cat, who is seemingly down to chill.
He loves to chill.
Yeah.
I feel like I had something else to say about cats.
Yeah. That's okay.
Well, we got to get better at our generalizations of animals.
Yeah, we got to.
Be aware, people. Be aware, and that's how
inclusivity. Absolutely. Be inclusive of all of Mother Nature's creatures.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What I realized when you were saying, too, is it's such a human thing to, like, walk into a room and have something not pay attention to us. And
yeah.
And be like, who cares about
me? Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean, that's on me. That's my ego. That's my, yeah.
I feel the same way, though. That's why I hate shitty cats.
Yeah.
Like, why waste my time? I get nothing back from you.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Well, okay. First good time story. First good news story.
Okay.
Is about, I love these. This is a story about a police officer who was a good police officer.
Great.
Which are my favorite.
Yeah.
This is in Atlanta. A little girl, he got a call. This Officer Milton got a call from the dollar store nearby that a 12-year-old girl had been caught stealing. And so he showed up, and she had been trying to steal a $2 pair of shoes for her 5-year-old sister.
Oh my God.
She said that her sister needed new shoes, but her family couldn't afford them. And so rather than, I mean, you would have to be such a dick to be like, I don't care, you're going to jail.
Yeah. But also, but like, happens. Those dicks exist, yeah. For sure. That's a part of the problem.
Exactly. So rather than doing that, he drove her home and met with her family. And she is the oldest of 4 kids. The youngest was a newborn baby. And he noticed right away that there, like, weren't enough beds for the kids. And there wasn't a lot of food in the house. The girl's mom told him that she's a stay-at-home mom because the family can't afford daycare, and that the husband has a job but just isn't making a lot of money. So he obviously did not arrest the girl, and he went out and bought a bunch of pizzas and stuff for the family and brought it back to the house. And then he started basically like a drop-off location for donations for
the family. That's amazing.
Yeah,
that's such a great story.
Protect and serve.
Yeah,
for real.
Yeah, and also like that. What a great way to I feel like, you know, police officers to connect with their community.
Yeah,
because I think that's been one of the major arguments about the shift in the way that policing is being done. Although I think a lot of people would say there's never been a shift.
Yeah,
they've always policed, I guess, in a certain way. It's just becoming more all over the internet now.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I do know that, like, it seems like a lot of police might be out of touch with the communities that they're,
yeah,
you know, patrolling. And that's a great way, I feel like, to get in touch with that community.
Yeah.
Right?
It's a huge, like, I would say that's the biggest issue there. This reminds, like, what we're talking about reminds me of a story I did way back in the beginning about a program called Cops and Barbers, where this guy who runs a barber shop who has, like, a crime-ridden past and all that, he basically started a thing where, like, inner city, his barbershop is like a token in the community, and a token, a pillar.
A pillar. Yeah. Yeah. There we go. Yeah. The token barbershop.
And what he started doing was getting involved with the police department and bringing them in. It started with just like haircuts and conversation. And then they like started doing this collaborative thing where they, have like community events, and the cops get very involved. They have picnics, and they, like, the story on it is so good because they talk about in the beginning, like, just the awkwardness, mm-hmm. that, which I feel like is important to be talked about, that it wasn't just like all of a sudden everybody was friends.
Right.
It was like a bunch of white cops in an African-American community, and right. they were like, let's get to know each other for real. And they got past like the initial awkwardness of like, here we all are at a picnic.
Right.
Too. And now this barbershop owner, Sean, and the they're like all really good friends. And so now when the cops, like, he'll even call them if he's, like, got a crazy thing going on. And now they don't have, like, they see other community members
yeah.
when they are, like, doing out on patrol, as opposed to black and white or seeing only crime and not crime, you know?
That's so great.
It's huge.
Yeah, that's really great.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then I feel like, you know, then police, I feel like, feel more like human beings
yeah.
and then to police, you know, citizens feel like more like human beings. And then everybody is yeah. looking at each other like human beings and not like, you know, the enemy or which, you know, is, I think once we start seeing people as human beings, it becomes yeah. harder to hate that person or see it in a black or white way, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I, you know, the generalization goes both ways because I feel like you have a bad experience with a police officer.
Yeah.
I mean, I have never had a bad, I'm a like white girl from Wyoming. I'm extremely lucky. I've never had a bad like situation
right.
with a police officer. I still, if there's one behind me, am like so freaked out. And
yeah.
I guess that's just also because I've never like had a necessarily great, you know,
yeah.
like see each other as the labels. And so the generalization, like you have a bad experience with a police officer, the next one you come across, you're going to assume that they're going to be dicks to you. And so maybe it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very true. But what a great story that is.
Yeah.
That he did that.
You know, not everybody is a dog and a cat. Sometimes you can be a chill cat.
Yeah, that's true. I feel like I'm learning this, you know.
It was like you actually made the perfect segue into this story.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm always looking for segues in this. You set up the perfect one.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
I'm known for that. I'm known for my segues. Yeah.
Let's see. Oh, San Francisco is doing a good job on some things.
I like San Francisco.
Yeah, I do too. It's... this one is a little bit about how, well, the homeless situation there is crazy. I can imagine that it's bad. It's so expensive to live there.
Yeah.
I was looking at like some charts and graphs about it and
charts and graphs
to both.
Oh my God. which one was more helpful?
I would say the graph.
Graphs were more helpful. Mm-hmm. Okay, great.
Or wait. What is the difference between a chart and a graph?
Oh, I have no idea.
Both.
Yeah.
A graph, there's different types of graphs. I looked at not the line kind because
yeah.
that's not as helpful for me. The kinds that look like mountains.
Got you.
But I did gain a lot of insight from the ones that shoot straight up like
mm-hmm.
different colored bars.
Yeah. I mean, you're talking to somebody who the only class, like I wasn't a straight A student,
mm-hmm.
But I wasn't a bad student either.
Yeah,
but
all the round.
Yeah, but one class that the only class in high school that I failed was statistics.
Oh, ugh.
And I could not fucking understand it. Like I just couldn't wrap my head around
yeah.
it. It was too like. It was just too mathy.
Yeah, in a mathy way that I don't know. I like algebra. That makes sense to me.
Yeah,
it's more like a puzzle. Like you just put in all the pieces and then you're able to figure out like the shape of what's
right.
missing. Statistics.
Yeah. Once they started talking about like correlation and causation and like
yeah.
all this shit, I was like, uh-oh.
It's like a bunch of stuff that's not math that you turn into math.
Yeah, for sure.
It's weird about it.
Yeah.
Me.
It's so hard.
Yeah. I can't.
Sorry.
I
real can't. Fast. Is that a marijuana plant?
Yes.
That is beautiful.
That's what,
I might ask you after we do this podcast, I might ask you some questions about
yeah.
that because I'm looking to have a little plant myself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll tell you what I know. My boyfriend, Charles, is the one who
He did it.
Did
it start as a clone?
No, he started it as a seed.
Wow.
He's got a real green thumb. I think if this was my responsibility entirely, it would be not anything like
you
that.
You would, yeah.
Yeah, my attention span for something ongoing like this is... My attention span is just so bad in general. I tried to take a bath for the first time since like high school the other day, and I couldn't.
That's crazy. You haven't taken a bath since high school?
I haven't.
It's just been all showers.
Yeah, all showers.
Wow.
Because baths are, I don't know, it seemed like a great idea. I got out of the bath 7 times to get stuff to bring to the bath to try and make it fun.
Right.
And so, yeah, most of my time was spent like sitting in the bath and then being like, oh, this is, you know what I should get. And like getting out of the bag.
Oh, that's funny.
And then by the time that I had everything, I was like, I sat there for about 4 minutes and then I was like, okay, well, yeah. I'm done with the bath.
Yeah.
I can't do it. I can't sit. I can't have plants. Can't have a bath.
Yeah. I love, I feel like the time I take a bath the most is if I'm at a hotel that has like a decent bathtub.
Oh, yeah. That's,
you know what I mean? Like right. the bigger sort of bathtubs.
Yeah.
Or like, I remember I stayed at a hotel, I think actually in San Francisco that had the, what are those called? The like, are they lion claws? The bathtubs
The
lion?
Clawfoot.
The clawfoot.
Those are very cool.
Those are dope. And when
why
it's like,
are they? It doesn't make sense as to why we think they're so cool. It's just a bath that's up. But
it is.
So
yeah.
Cool.
It is cool. It is cool. I think like, because... One thing I like about them is like they're like deeper, you know what I mean? I feel like it's as opposed to a normal bath. I don't know. Yeah, you're right. I think also maybe because it's just it feels like I'm taking a bath in the 1920s.
Yeah, like a king. Well, kings, are, I guess we're over. But
yeah,
it does feel very like.
Like Winston.
So fancy.
Yeah, like Winston Churchill famously would sit in his like clawfoot bath and think of his foreign policy and what to do. Yeah.
Then he'd get out 7 times and bring
more essential oils and what do they call those? Bath bombs?
Yeah.
I've never done a bath bomb. San Francisco though.
Right,
you were saying
Bath in San Francisco leads us to the terrible housing problem there. It's so charts and graphs.
Right.
I looked at some charts.
Yeah.
Or graphs. I guess a chart would be like an Excel sheet.
Okay.
I didn't look at anything like that.
Right.
I looked at a graph. Basically, the amount that people have to make in San Francisco, I feel like the poverty line for a single male in federally is like $12,000
okay.
or something a year.
Right.
In San Francisco, I don't know why I said single male. That's what the graph said. Well, I guess dudes make more.
Ugh. Yeah.
Dudes make more than ladies.
I know.
So freaking dumb.
Yeah, it is.
So that's why. But in San Francisco, it's like 35,000 or something.
Is the poverty line?
Not. It's how much you have to make to be self-sustainable.
Holy shit.
In San Fran. And then it has like all the outer lying areas.
Right.
As well. And crazy graphs.
More. And is that just to like live in a place and
I think to be able to like live in a place, buy food for yourself,
right,
and be sustainable in a way that isn't like struggling. But
crazy.
So there's this organization called Tipping Point Community which just pledged like 2 days ago that they're going to raise $100 million for the poverty and homeless causes in San Francisco.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I looked into what Tipping Point is, and it seems like it's basically like it's a giant nonprofit. And what they do is they raise money and give it to other nonprofits who help with all the different aspects.
Okay.
Because they bring up, you know, there's no one way to fix the homeless problem or the housing crisis or any of that. So they raise money and grants. Is that how you would say that? They grant a grant?
They give
a grant.
Yeah.
To the different nonprofits helping in different ways. And so they just pledged they're going to do $100 million. I think this year. They've already done $100 million in the past, but they just made a big announcement. Like,
and has that? Do you know what that $100 million, like, what kind of dent that will make into it, or have they said anything like that?
They said that last year, the grantees, that's the right word for it. The grantees impact that they gave grants to impacted the lives of 137,000 people in need.
Wow.
They also focus a lot on schooling and job training, finding stable housing. So almost 2,000 students enrolled in college. They help with college payment. 2,400 people enrolled in new jobs. About 6,000 people found stable housing. 800 babies were born at a healthy weight.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah.
That's so great. Does San Francisco have... San Francisco doesn't have a bigger homeless population than LA, though, does it?
It doesn't. I guess what I was reading is, like, the... Since it's so much smaller, like, the amount... the actual... population amount is smaller, but the statistics are 1 in 5 people
in San Francisco.
Yeah, or in the Bay Area in general.
Holy shit! 1 in 5 people are homeless.
Yeah.
Wow.
Or at struggling
or impoverished.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Because sometimes homeless can also mean, like, maybe you're not technically on the street, but your housing situation is like maybe you have 5 people in a 1-bedroom.
Right.
Can also be considered.
Right.
Homeless.
And then, and it's not consistent and it's that's crazy. It just goes to show you that, like, even in a great state like California, which I always really, I'm very proud of the fact that I live in California,
yeah.
But even in a state as great as California, we still got to do better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
still not good enough, California.
Yeah. And there's so much, it's a tough thing to figure out because what's happening is, like, there's so much money in places like San Francisco and the Bay Area because of tech and all of that that's blowing up.
Right.
That it's pushing everybody else out.
Yeah.
And then LA is its own anomaly, like Skid Row. Like, people will put their homeless populations on buses and send them to Los Angeles.
Will they really?
Mm-hmm. Because we have, like, I think we're one of the only cities with, like, a designated, like, Skid Row is, like, a designated
right.
spot on the map. So.
Which is terrible.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Well, I remember reading something about, and I'm not 100% sure exactly what they did, but I remember reading this article that Salt Lake City in Utah
yes.
did some sort of, like, provide... shelter or like, I think a 1-bedroom apartment or something mm-hmm. like that for every single homeless person in the city.
Yeah.
And I guess they saw really great results from it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to write that down to look into for next week's stuff because I was talking about this. I think with my mom, they did, like, totally eradicate their homeless problem.
Yeah. In Salt Lake City.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think I remember reading that as well.
Okay, I'm going to do some research on that, find some charts and graphs and...
More charts and graphs.
Get back to people next week.
I feel like in my brain, and maybe I'm wrong here, but in my brain, I feel like graphs are usually a little bit more fun, maybe?
Yeah.
Like a little bit more colorful?
Yeah.
And charts to me feel a little bit more maybe just like a straight up numbers sort of thing.
Right, like just a list of...
Yeah.
Numbers.
Yeah. But I also don't feel very confident about what I said.
I don't either. Also, next week, I'm going to get back to everybody about the difference between a chart and a graph.
Yeah. We'll get back to you on that, guys.
And super sorry for anyone listening who knows anything about that.
Yeah. And also super sorry to anybody that's listening to this that has to wait a week to find out the difference between a chart and a graph.
You can't find out on your own. You
no.
have to wait.
And they're just pacing in their place back and forth.
What is it?
Yeah.
Do they have colors?
God, I have to wait till next week. All week I'm going to be wondering about this.
I have no idea.
Is it a chart? Is it a graph? Is it a diagram?
Oh, that's a,
oh, a diagram.
Okay, wait. This, I just thought a pie chart is a colorful image-based thing. So,
oh, fuck.
I don't know.
Oh,
we got it.
No.
I'm going to research
but
this.
Is it a pie chart or a pie graph?
Oh, see, there we go.
Yeah, but I think you could call it either, can't you?
You probably could. I could probably Google this right now and find it in one sentence, but I'm not going to.
And see, this goes right back to what we started talking about, which is, I think clearly I have very generalized ideas of certain things. Like I want cats to be like dogs,
yeah.
Or I want all my charts to be just numbers and my graphs to be fun and colorful and playful. But really, why can't a chart be playful?
Yeah.
And why can't a graph just be numbers?
Maybe they can be both.
Absolutely, they can be both. They can be whatever they want to be. That's the beauty of identity, you know? Yeah.
Nothing can hold you back.
That's right.
Not even James Mastriani.
And I'll try. I'll try my best to hold you back.
Okay. San Francisco, doing good, $100 million. Tipping Point does seem like a good... I did have a moment where I was like, is this a... I do have a hard time understanding it a little bit because it's like a giant company that raises money and gives it to smaller companies.
Right.
Which I'm like, that could be a bad thing. But I think they have a bunch of private donors and they also work with the government and get people behind them. In a big way,
right.
And then disperse the money to different people. And they put a lot of research into whether nonprofits really do what they're saying they're going to do.
Oh, good. Yeah.
They do like a pretty extensive screening process.
Yeah. Because you don't want to give it all to Wyclef Jean.
No.
For sure. Make sure he's not running any of those nonprofits.
Yeah.
Because one thing we learned about Wyclef Jean is that he will steal all the money from the nonprofit.
Is it Jean or...
Is it Jean?
It's Wyclef Jean.
Is it?
But I...
Wyclef Jean? That makes sense because he's from Haiti and that's French, right?
And it's just like
partially
how
French.
Jean is spelled like John.
Yeah, that makes sense. I apologize.
I am saying this to you as a person who has also said Jean and got jumped on.
saying Wyclef Jean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
People were like... Oh, Hannah.
Yeah.
Come on. And I was like, I know.
It's understandable. I probably deserve to be reprimanded for saying Jean instead of Jean.
People come out.
Wyclef Jean. You know what? If you steal $15 million from a nonprofit that you're claiming is helping people in Haiti, you don't deserve to have your last name pronounced the way it should be pronounced.
Yeah. We're going to call you Jean.
Yeah. When you're a monster, when you're an absolute awful human being.
Yeah. I didn't even know about this.
You didn't know about this?
No.
Oh, Google this shit. He is terrible. He set up this huge sort of like relief nonprofit organization for Haiti after Haiti was like just fucking devastated.
Oh.
And then my man took millions.
That's so bad.
Yeah.
Well, tipping. Yeah, I'm going down the rabbit hole of it right now. Tipping Point will not be giving any money to Wyclef
Jean. That's good.
They'll find you out. So don't try and get a grant from them.
Yeah,
they won't
that's
grant
great.
It to you. Trying to see if there's anything else I wanted to say about them. The official launch date for the 100 million initiative is July 1st. But they've already dished out 2 million.
Oh, great.
They're tossing millions.
That's great.
Like, yeah, which is one thing. For some reason, it makes sense that I get skeptical, but I'm like, where's this? When there's millions of dollars in a place, I'm always like, but how and why?
Especially $100 million is so much money.
Yeah.
When it's that much money and like, you know, feel like people could just... Take a little here, take a little here,
right.
You know? Yeah.
And no one, well, I'll try and stay positive about it.
Yeah.
I get so negative about money in general because I hate it. I just hate it so much.
Yeah, it's pretty,
twisted.
It really is, yeah.
People get weird when you get it, like when you start, people just get so weird about it.
Some people do, yeah. Some people definitely like, I feel like money, you just, got to use it as a tool, but then when you start to like make it some sort of great priority in your life, maybe, yeah, that's over other things that should be a priority, I think, yeah, maybe that's when it becomes a problem.
Yeah, it takes a turn.
Yeah.
Oh, here's a side note about a rapper who is doing good things with money and not taking it from people. Did you see Nicki Minaj is like paying everyone's student loans?
I did. I think that is so dope.
Yeah.
That is so cool. Yeah.
So, yeah, I read through all the tweets and all of it this morning. She did paid off 30 different people's student loans.
Man, that's so generous and incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it too, because she did it because it started because of some contest that's happening, and she tweeted out a thing of like, yeah, I'll pay for your airfare if you win. Like, people are doing a contest to try and get a trip to Las Vegas to spend time with her for something, and she'll pay for their airfare. And somebody tweeted out like, how about paying for my student loans? And then she was like, okay. And she like started this whole thing.
No way.
Saturday night. Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And then, so she just did it.
She started feeling like generous. Yeah. And man, that's awesome. Good for her.
Yeah. She
and good for those people. Like, that's giving, you know, student loans are fucking crazy ridiculous.
Yeah. It's a nightmare.
Giving people an opportunity, maybe.
Yeah. And she did have the stipulation, you have to have a 4.0 and send me your, like, I need confirmation from your school that you're like a student and you have a 4.0.
That's
no
cool.
Rip-offs, people.
Yeah, no rip-offs. 4.0, that's I know. She's not fucking around either. I mean, like, that's like, you got to be a really good student.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had sometimes a 4.0, but then some stuff like statistics.
Yeah.
Sneak in there and I will do a bad job.
Yeah. No, I don't think I ever got that 4.0. Yeah.
Thinking hard about it.
It's too late for me. Yeah.
She'll never pay off your student loans. Speaking of young people and college, look at this.
Nice segue. Nice segue.
There's a 18-year-old kid who his mom had breast cancer twice. Had to have a double mastectomy, basically. He is 18 years old. He developed a bra that will hopefully be able to detect breast cancer.
Wow.
Yeah. It's called the, and this is like just, this just in. So it hasn't been, it's new. It hasn't been around for them long enough to know if it will totally stop it.
Right.
But the idea is, it's called the Ava bra. He also just won like a crazy Young People in Science award to get it out there more.
That's amazing.
Yeah, his name is Julian Rios Cantu. This is a Mexican company that he and like the board of, I gotta show you the photo, the board of people who run the company, the photos of them.
Oh, weird.
It's like a ton of like 18-year-old kids.
That's crazy. Yeah. It really is. It's like it's like four young men.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And he's the CEO. The idea is you would put it on once a week, and it would do for like an hour or two, and it does like a full scan and tracks like everything about your boobs, like texture and heat and color, temperature.
That's incredible.
And then it records it, and there's like an app. Of course, there's an app. There's an app for everything.
There's an app for everything, even breast cancer. Yeah.
And so you'll be able to track and notice any differences right away, because the biggest thing with breast cancer is you a lot of times it's not detected until it's way too late.
Right. Yeah. My mom is a breast cancer survivor.
She is.
Yeah,
oh,
she is. She also had double mastectomy.
Wow.
And she hit her 5-year remission mark like 2 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah. So she's now back at that. I guess once you have the double mastectomy, and then once you get to 5 years, your percentage of getting that kind of cancer again is like goes back to very, very, very low.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. But she was also, I mean, she was very lucky. She got it, you know, I think it was like right in the beginning of like stage two, and it was, you know, not, it hadn't metastasized or anything.
Yeah. Oh, it's so scary.
Yeah. I hope they can somehow come up with like a whole body bra that just detects cancer anywhere.
Yeah. You just get in a scuba suit.
Yeah.
Once a week.
Yeah. That would be great.
Yeah.
Or like that from, I mean, it wasn't a great movie, that Elysium with Matt Damon, where all the rich people live up on the, like, Earth is a shithole and all the rich people live up on this spacecraft that's, like, floating just above Earth.
Right.
Just to, like, rub it into everybody's faces. And, like, the people that are on that ship, they're able to, like, lie in these things that kill all their cancer cells every day.
Whoa.
Which is pretty... I mean, obviously, it's a fictional movie.
It's a movie, but...
But that'd be pretty cool.
That would be pretty cool. Just jump in a microwave every day.
Yeah.
It's done.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like... I do think this idea, like, will... Well, it'll have to escalate to full body soon.
Yeah, right? Hopefully.
I mean, there's a thing out there. I keep getting stupid ads on my Facebook. I get ads for the stupidest thing, and it makes me question, like, my personality, because I know that Facebook, like, screens
stuff,
and they target specifically towards
you. Yeah.
And mine are all that frickin' that karaoke thing where you basically sing karaoke by yourself into your phone.
Really?
Why is this? I thought everyone was getting them. I get them all over the place. And then I realized, no, this is targeting me.
That's so funny.
Or something. And I think it's because Facebook listens while I sing in my car.
Oh, yeah. That's really funny. They must, yeah.
Because I don't talk about karaoke ever.
Yeah.
Never like, we got to go to karaoke tonight.
That's crazy.
And then the other thing I get is this thing called the glove, which, so this is not going to be far off. It's like this pair of shorts you put on, and it measures everything about like your weight and your body so you can lose weight. Like,
oh,
so
really?
It's better, supposed to be better than a scale.
Oh, so interesting. So it's like measuring like what, like your BMI and your body fat percentage and that sort of stuff?
Yeah. And
cool.
Like your measurement. Yeah, I know. I'm like, oh, that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
I'd probably put it on too much just because it would be fun.
Right. Yeah. See,
what's going on?
Let's see where I'm at. Yeah.
But those are the two things that are on there all the time. I'm like, who am I?
That's
like
so funny. I remember for a while I kept seeing a bunch of advertisements for men's underwear. But it would always show up different kinds of underwear, because I was on Amazon and was trying to buy new underwear.
Yeah.
And but I tend to be pretty much, like, in terms of comfort, just a boxer briefs type of guy, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think the combination of the two is a nice, it's a nice hybrid that works for me.
Yeah.
But I would get all of these ads on my Facebook for all these different kinds of men's underwear, which made me like, okay, the algorithm picked up on that I was looking for underwear.
Right.
But boy, did it miss what kind of, I'm not going to buy a bikini cut.
Yeah, come on.
Yeah. I'm not buying bikini cup underwear. That's very uncomfortable to me. So the algorithm was a little bit off, I think.
Off.
Yeah.
I hope it's way off for me. Maybe this is just the type of person I am.
Yeah.
I'm just like apparently obsessed with my weight and love to go to karaoke. And I didn't think I was either one of those things.
That's really funny.
Okay. So bra, guess breast cancer bra. Also, way to go teenagers for just doing good stuff.
Way to go teenagers.
Yeah.
Just when as we get older and we count you out, you surprise us.
Yeah, you find your way back in.
Yeah.
Oh, are we already to? Oh, wait, no. I found this cool group. I've talked in the past couple episodes with Mary Holland. I talked about this a tool library in St. Cloud.
St. Cloud, Minnesota.
Yes.
Cool.
Yeah. I almost said Missouri, but it's Minnesota for sure. You're right.
Yeah. I mean, maybe there's more than one.
St. Cloud, Minnesota, where Casey Fay is from. apparently.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So I don't really know Casey Faye, but everyone tell him to go here when he goes back, because you can go and you can rent any tool. And there's also a building warehouse, and you can, like, the whole idea is sharing and being able to make stuff without having to spend the money on the tools, and also being able to have the space to do it. So I was so excited about that. And then I found something similar to it again last week. And then this week, I found this place in Toronto. They have a tool library as well, with, like, building space. And also you can rent any tool that you need. And now they have the sharing depot, which is every, like, just the whole idea is stuff that you might need just sometimes, but you don't want to spend the money and you don't have the storage. So the idea is to cut down on consumerism,
right?
So they have camping supplies, they have party supplies, basically just a whole huge inventory of stuff.
That's great.
Yeah.
And that really does. Yeah. That's so, cause like everybody, you're totally right. Like, everybody doesn't need a ladder.
No.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm not talking about a step stool. I'm talking about, like, one of those big ass, how often are you getting on a roof, you know? But if there was a place where you could go and you could share a ladder and then cut down on, like, you know, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
I guess that would be better for the earth, right? Yeah.
Yeah. I love this.
That's cool.
I love it so much. Because they're like, they have a ton of stuff for, like, house parties. Like, if you need a karaoke machine.
There it is. Here we are.
I love karaoke. Then you can rent that, and you can take stuff out. There's different memberships. They're all extremely affordable. The one in St. Cloud is, like, you pay $50 for the full year, and you have access to as many tools.
That's a great deal.
Yeah, take it out and return it. This one, there's different levels of membership, but you can rent stuff for 3 to 4 days or for a full week and then bring it back. They have games, they have, they have it all. And then they also have basically swap meets, but where everything is share swap as opposed to costing money. So, like, a gift economy idea where, if you're a member, they'll hold different events and you bring stuff that you don't want anymore, and you can look around and take stuff that maybe you need. Yeah. And it was all started, the company is, like, a Canadian nonprofit that started. So they started the tool one and then this one, just basically to be like, how do we cut back on our waste? So it's called the Institute for a Resource-Based Economy.
It's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would never, some people are so, inventive and just, like, smart and such great problem solvers. I feel like I would never think of stuff like that.
Yeah, it's such a basic idea too, that when you hear about it, you're like, of course.
Yeah. It makes perfect sense. So smart.
Their vision is to IRBE is the acronym. They envision a world that responds. Wait, I'm just going to read the whole thing.
Yeah.
I'm trying to summarize it and I'm doing a bad job. The mission of IRB is to work at the intersection of economics and the environment by challenging people's perceptions of ownership and our relationship to the Earth's resources. Our vision, today's dominant economic system has created unprecedented crises that exploit people and our planet. IRBE envisions a world that responds to this crisis by sharing resources, creating resilient projects and communities, and motivating us to our highest potential. Yeah, I'm into it. I'm very into it. They also do, same with the, I'm obsessed with the tool library in St. Cloud, because I think it's one of the only ones in the United States.
That's so cool. Yeah.
But they do a thing there, and they also do this here where people know how to build shit and they have these awesome tools and they'll teach you how to do stuff.
Right. That's really cool.
Yeah.
Make people more self-sufficient.
And also, it's such a huge thing if you live in a city, because, like, I'd love to make my own stuff. I was talking about this with Mary. There's no place to do it.
Yeah.
Nobody has a table saw.
Yeah.
Or a cutter stuff.
Absolutely.
Stuff to cut stuff.
Yeah. It'd be cool to do something, and maybe this already exists too, but I was just thinking, like, it'd be cool to do something like that with creative things or art as well.
Yeah.
Like have like an instrument library or a library where you could go get sculpting material or painting material or like that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Would be pretty cool.
Yeah. Everything library.
Yeah.
I love this idea so much. Because, it just keeps people from buying.
Yep.
We don't need to buy stuff anymore. There's already enough stuff.
There's so much stuff.
We can just stop buying it.
Yeah.
And just use each other's stuff.
That's true.
Yeah.
Could all cut back a little bit.
We really should. Okay. Are you ready for some good hometown news?
I'm ready. Let's hear it.
Okay. James is from
Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
You're when I think of a proud Pittsburghian, I think of you.
Gotta be proud of, proud to be from Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
It's a great city.
Yeah. Did you have a good time growing up there?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you know, just like any other city, it comes with its challenges and its benefits and that sort of stuff. But there's so many great things about Pittsburgh that I think get overlooked in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. I think people have this vision of Pittsburgh as being this sort of what it used to be, which is, you know, sort of like a dying city or a city that is dirty and industrial.
Yeah.
And it's really not that anymore. It's become this hubbub for this major hub for like biochemical type of stuff and science and medicine. So it's great.
Big hubbub.
Big hubbub. And I was like, wait, that's not the word. A hub.
Hubbub, hubbub.
A big hubbub. yeah, it's great.
That's really cool.
Great food too. I mean, it's terrible food for you, a lot of it, but it's just so fucking good.
Is it the place of like hoagies and that kind of stuff? Is that
hoagies,
what I'm thinking?
Pierogies. it's got a huge Italian and Polish influence.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of sandwiches. Permani Brothers is like a sandwich shop where they put French fries and coleslaw on every single sandwich.
Oh,
it's
my gosh.
Fucking unbelievable.
That sounds
it's
really
so good. Yeah.
Do you eat at Fat Sal's here?
Not yet. This is the second day in a row, I shit you not, where somebody has asked me if I've been to Fat Sal's and how I need to go there.
Yeah, you probably should.
Yeah.
If you like stuff and sandwiches. I ordered a sandwich there from there once that I was confused and I thought it was a sandwich with like chicken fingers and fries and stuff on the side.
And it was
all inside the sandwich.
Wow. That sounds bomb.
They have really good sandwiches. Yeah. Well, talking about how Pittsburgh is becoming more of a part of what I read is that like a lot of young people are actually moving back into like the main part of the city.
Yeah.
So the city hubs are getting bigger, but because of that, similar to San Francisco, there's a lot of people are having a hard time finding affordable housing, which has become an issue. And so the city
in Pittsburgh proper.
Yeah.
Got you.
Mm-hmm. Also, what is Rust Belt? Do you know what that is about?
Mm-hmm.
The Rust Belt cities?
Yeah. The Rust Belt is considered to be the part of the country that at one point was sort of the driving coal and steel industries.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're talking about Rust Belt cities are like Pittsburgh, Cleveland, maybe Detroit could be considered that, Erie, Pennsylvania, through like West Virginia a little bit. Those are like the Rust Belt.
Okay.
Yeah. It's also, I mean, the Rust Belt is a lot of the reason why Hillary Clinton is not our president.
Right.
Yeah.
Coal, and old school stuff.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, so in those, I guess it's speaking about those, like it says, like a lot of Rust Belt cities, it's undergoing a rental renaissance, apparently.
Oh, yeah.
So a lot of people are moving back in and it's becoming more of a
you new, rent.
Yeah, new yeah. school, more of a, well, it makes me think probably of like had downtown LA right now, because it used to be yeah. just more industrial and there was nobody there. And now it's like such the hip, cool place to be.
Yeah.
And it's expensive. So anyway, the Pittsburgh Community Reinvestment Group is a coalition of leaders working for economic justice and equitable resource to revitalize the Pittsburgh region. So right now they're working on affordable housing and the housing, what is the Affordable Housing Task Force and the Housing Opportunity Fund, which was something that I think was created this year, that is a giant pool of money, which is overseen by governing and advisory board, which creates new affordable housing within city limits and also rehabilitates old structures that are maybe going down. So
that's great.
Yeah.
Especially for a city like Pittsburgh that has, I think, probably a lot of, I mean, I don't go back quite as much as when I was there, but
yeah.
probably a lot of infrastructure issues, mm-hmm. like really old buildings,
yeah.
really old bridges. Because Pittsburgh's the city of bridges. It's got the second most bridges in the world.
What?
Yeah.
Bridges are so cool.
Bridges are cool.
They're so pretty.
Yeah. And it's got like the only city in the world with more bridges is Amsterdam.
Oh, interesting.
Because the city of Pittsburgh, it was built on three separate rivers.
Oh, I didn't know that.
That come together to form it's the Ohio River, the Allegheny, and the Monongahela.
Oh, cool.
And they form this triangle, and that's where Pittsburgh's on.
Do people go floating in Pittsburgh?
Oh, yeah.
Floating? Yeah.
It's a huge, they have a big like every summer they have like speedboat races, and you know, people that have boats during Pirates games will like go into the river and drink and
yeah.
like, yeah,
that's fun.
It's a big, big thing.
River people are fun people.
Oh, the river people.
Yeah. So they're basically working to put a big pool of money into making it so people don't get pushed out of the city, and that old structures get revitalized and people can still afford to live there.
That's great.
As things change. The only issue that they're coming up against is figuring where to get the money from, because it's basically a tax. And the first one they did was put a tax on real estate trading. So when things go from one hand to another, they pay a higher tax. But all the realtors are really mad about that. So I guess they're kind of in a flux on as where to continue to pull the money from.
Yeah, gotcha.
That's their biggest thing. Yeah, they just want to make sure that what's happening to Pittsburgh, like a lot of other cities, doesn't happen to Pittsburgh, it sounds like, with people getting pushed out.
Yeah, good for you, Pittsburgh.
Yeah, good job.
Yeah.
Pittsburgh man, Jack Bromba, whose dad was, is that how you say it? His dad was Boyd Bromba, who played for the Pittsburgh Steelers. And he's like a dude around Pittsburgh town who's known as Coach, because he also, he used to coach semi-pro football.
Okay.
But he's like volunteer of the year, probably. We'll find out on Thursday.
Oh, we'll find out on Thursday. Well, good luck.
Yeah, he spends a lot of, like, for over 10 years, he's just been helping the homeless a ton. And he goes out all the time, spends time with the homeless community, brings them stuff they need, blankets, food, all of that. He started a smaller organization called Blankets Over Pittsburgh. And yeah, he is like a super dope guy, I guess.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's great.
Love it. Good job. I hope he wins.
Yeah. Find out on Thursday.
Yeah. Okay, now we're to Animal Corner, which is where I just give news about animals.
Great.
This one made me laugh a lot. I found it in like some small town newspaper. In Tennessee, that's like so obscure and funny to me. So they're calling all animal lovers at the Williamson County Animal Center. They're they're doing a thing where like everyone is gonna paint rocks to raise awareness for the animal center.
They're gonna paint rocks?
Yeah.
Like paint them how? Like what?
It says they're gonna they're gonna paint a bunch of rocks and hide them around the community.
Okay.
And I'm assuming the rocks will probably say stuff about the animal center.
Oh, I see. So if you find it, you get like a little fact or a tidbit or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, little hubbub.
Little hubbub.
Yeah. You get a little hubbub.
And that art supplies are being provided by the shelter. All you need to bring are some rocks.
Just bring some rocks to raise awareness for the animals.
Yeah. I love it so much.
That's great.
It's so obscure and specific.
Yeah.
So that's happening in Tennessee. Also, there was a thing that was started at American University in Washington, D.C., where people who are afraid of, like, as part of one of their, I think, classes there, I think it was history, they've started bringing audiences of dogs for people to practice giving their speeches to.
Really?
Yeah.
That's really funny. They started how do you keep them under control?
I guess they're chill dogs.
Yeah.
Maybe they're part service. This is an example of me like reading slightly into it and being like, that's great. And then not going much further.
Right.
But they because dogs are often used to reduce anxiety. And so there's like special audience dogs that they're bringing in.
That's so funny.
Oh, wait. It says they're not trained dogs. We're looking for dogs that are very secure and chill and loving, who will maintain eye contact.
Who will maintain eye contact.
Yeah, I think that's so funny because personally for me, I don't think that would reduce my anxiety about public speaking.
Yeah.
The idea of standing in a room full of dogs staring at me would like make me so self-aware of that's what I was doing.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I don't have any issues really with public speaking, but I think that that would definitely be something that I don't see how I would get any benefits from it. Yeah. I mean, I love dogs, so that would be dope. I'd give a speech to dogs.
Yeah. Seems pretty generalized to me though.
Yeah.
No cats.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, yeah, there. Yep, you're right. There I go again. There I go again.
It's not just you, James. You're not. You're just a part of the problem.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's my good news. And now we're to my favorite part, where I just get to ask you about your own personal good news story.
Yeah.
Time in your life that you were affected in a positive way.
Yeah. You had emailed me this, asking me this, and it's such a hard question to answer because there's just so many, you know. I feel like in 33 years, I feel like there's been so many moments of good things, you know.
Yeah.
So it's hard to like figure out which one to talk about.
Well, it better be the very best one.
I know, right? Like it's there's that pressure to make it like incredible or amazing or what have you.
But that's what I like about it, because the point is it doesn't need to be incredible. It's like
right.
listening to everybody's stories, because it proves to me like good stuff happens all the time.
Yeah.
To everybody. And listening to people talk about it, it like affects people in ways that it is like long lasting, and you don't realize it until you kind of really start to think about it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very true. Well, I mean, like, one way that you know me is through, you know, improv and comedy and such.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that in a lot of ways, I think that improv and, you know, UCB and the community and all that sort of stuff obviously has played a major part, but just improv in general, just the art form of it and everything, mm-hmm. You know, I think helped me. I think when I, you know, coming out of a out of my adolescence,
yeah.
You know, as an adolescent and in my early 20s and stuff, I was, I think I was dealing with a lot of like depression and emotional problems. And I've had depression for, you know, since I was like 14 or 15 years old, and a lot of different issues, and I was getting in trouble a lot with the police and the law and getting arrested, and you know, really hadn't found, I don't think I had found a way to live life in any way. And then when I discovered improv, I don't know, I think that I started to learn a little bit better and more about, through improv, how to deal with my emotions, you know, and I think obviously therapy helps as well. I wouldn't say that improv is a replacement for therapy, but definitely helps the two go together. And, you know, I think it really helped me deal with those issues a lot better and sort of start to try to live more of like a moment to moment type of existence, off stage, just like on stage, and be a little bit more aware of that. It's been really helpful. And as a result, I'm helping, you know, in a lot of my life, there's been a mental health has been like a pretty big thing in my family. Like my dad, both of my parents are recovering addicts and have dealt with mental health themselves. My dad is a psychologist and deals with substance abuse and, or he's retired now. So like mental health was a pretty big thing in my family. And I'm actually working with, a psychiatrist now to try to develop a very simple, like, structured improv based thing for people with, severe mental health issues.
Oh, cool.
To try to get them to just be able to, on a basic level, communicate a little bit better and have a little bit of relief from their mental health issues. And I think that, like, again, there's been so many positive things, but I think that for me, that's definitely something that has been, you know, taken me from a place where I didn't know where I was heading in my life. And I did feel very much, you know, sort of controlled by my depression and anxiety and you know, and found this great thing that was able to help me live, I think, a little bit of a better life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Like, as you were talking, I was just thinking about, just as people, I feel like we just want to be heard, and communication is, why is it so hard?
Yeah.
You know? And I think improv has helped me with that a lot as well. And it's funny that, like, you have to go on stage and be living in a pretend world to figure out
totally
how to do better in this world.
Yeah.
Why does it seem so much more scary to talk to people one-on-one as opposed to like fake talk to them
right
on stage?
Right. Or... yeah. I don't know. I think for me, it helped me realize, just in the practice of trying to replicate being human, it helped me understand what it means to be human a little bit more. And I think when I've been able to understand what it means to be human, I've been able to forgive myself.
Yeah.
I've been able to forgive other people. And I've been able to sort of live in those nuances a little bit more, as opposed to, you know, I think that when I was dealing a lot more with mental health stuff, everything's very black and white.
Yeah.
Very black and white. And it wasn't until like really discovering this that I think that I was really able to recognize just how gray and nuanced everything is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you know, I obviously this is just one small chapter of my life, and I in no way, shape, or form have anything figured out. But, you know, and I don't think anybody does,
no.
But if you can find something in your life that helps you manage your moment to moment happiness, mm-hmm. right? And helps you understand just those moments in your life, or get more meaning from those moments in your life than whatever it is. I think that that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I feel like something that's definitely helped me too. I think everybody has anxiety, and everybody, like, yeah. realizing that everybody kind of feels that way.
Totally.
And has, I don't know, I feel like you grow up, especially as a teenager, I feel like part of the reason teenagers are so angsty is, like, that's when you realize that maybe the world is kind of shitty.
Yeah.
And parents and everybody already know that and have been living in it. So
right.
in your head, you're like, are you not seeing this?
Yeah.
And in their heads, they're like, yes, we have for a long time. We
totally.
Still go through the world.
Absolutely. Yeah. Because you got to.
Yeah.
You got to keep moving forward.
Yeah. And so kind of coming to that realization that, like, oh, everybody has these fears and this anxiety. Everybody, when they walk into a room or are meeting people, is like
yeah,
a little nervous.
Totally.
Nobody's like as cool as they, like, we all
Nobody
have this
is.
Weird energy.
Yeah.
And so just being like, oh yeah, we are.
I know. I know. And that's another thing is, like, that I've learned as well for myself, is being able to, like, embrace my insecurities and mm-hmm. embrace my neuroses and, you know, embrace just how messy and imperfect I am. And also how messy and imperfect everybody else is too.
Yeah.
And improv has always taught me and provided me an opportunity to learn how to play with that messiness
yeah.
and play with that, imperfection on stage, and I think as a result of that, it's helped me off stage as well.
Yeah.
I mean, like, that feels like maybe that's, is that good news? I don't know.
I think it's great news.
Yeah.
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 When I realize that's why I love comedy, is because it celebrates imperfections rather than trying to hide them.
Yeah.
And when I first moved to LA, I was so freaked out about. And I don't know, especially as a girl, like, oh, okay, I should start being smaller and try and fit
totally.
Into the
this
certain
person
type
of, or yeah. that type. Yeah.
And once I realized, I'd always liked comedy and I'd always leaned towards it. But once I realized that's what I wanted to do, I was like,
yeah,
oh, it just celebrates people.
It does.
You're not trying to hide anything. You're trying to blow
yeah.
it out and, like, be like, see, look at this crazy thing.
Totally. Absolutely.
I love that so much.
I feel like it celebrates people and it celebrates authenticity
yeah.
and it celebrates people that embrace, you know, who they are authentically
yeah.
as opposed to so much. I feel like of life for a lot of people is hiding who they really are
mm-hmm.
Or fabricating who they are as opposed to embracing themselves fully and just going, this is who I am.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing I can do about it. There's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah.
You know, so let's just deal with who I am.
Yeah.
And I'll deal with who you are and
yeah.
we'll figure out a way to make it work, you know,
moving forward.
Yeah.
It's like, I was talking to one of my friends recently about when people do weird little lies about stuff.
Right.
So frustrating. Cause if you're just upfront from the beginning, like, I'll stand behind you.
Yeah.
Even if I don't necessarily agree with it, I'm not going to hate you.
Yeah.
I'm going to be like, well, this is who you are. And thanks for being up. But it's when people lie about stuff or are, like, weirdly hiding who they are.
Totally.
Then it makes things so weird.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then you get mad and you get hurt when you find out that they're not being authentic.
Totally.
I would so much rather have somebody be an authentic, insane human that I'm friends with
Same.
Than, like, find out later that they were lying.
Yeah. Yeah. I completely agree. Yeah.
Be yourself.
But I can also, like, I also have a lot of empathy for people that out there that do struggle with finding that authenticity
oh, yeah,
in, them, in
absolutely.
Themselves. Because not everybody is able to, you know, go to therapy or, you know, spend years studying a very nuanced
right.
art form that's, you know, sort of based in inclusivity and self-exploration mm-hmm. and self-awareness and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Not everybody can have that. And that's a bummer because I would put that in every high school in America.
Yeah.
I would put improv in in every high school in America, because I think that it's something that could teach people at the time when they need it the most, mm-hmm. you know, how to just be themselves a yeah. little bit. Yeah.
It's such a struggle. I still, sometimes I'm like, am I being authentic or am I being,
sure,
you know,
yeah, me
like
too.
On a daily, and then I'll go into weird panic attack spirals about moments with people. And it's so hard not to do that.
Yeah.
But it, especially as Oscar Montoya had a really great story about being a teenager and one, cause he moved here, went from Colombia.
Right.
And he was always so into dance, and being a teenager, in New York, a teenage boy who wanted to dance and having people make fun of him for right. it. And then having a teacher be like, no, you're so good at this, and this is what you love to do. And that's
amazing.
Awesome. So the idea of having improv and more stuff like that in yeah. high schools.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. 100%.
Yeah. I just went on a frogly jump of all my thoughts.
That's great. Yeah. No, I think that's, I totally agree. I totally agree. I think, you know, high school is fucking brutal.
Oh, it's the worst.
And we haven't figured out the best way to do high school yet. I think as a society, you know, there's still so much to be learned about how to create better people,
mm-hmm.
create smarter people. And hopefully we figure that out sooner than later. But I wish that along the way they would try more stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or empathy. I feel like empathy is such a huge thing that should be.
And that's taught. Another thing that improv has taught me. I feel like so much.
Yeah.
Is and again, like I'm it's something that I work on every single day is empathy and figuring out why this person is a human being, mm-hmm. you know. And some people make it much harder than others.
Yeah.
You know, it's very hard to have empathy for Jeff Sessions or Donald Trump
right.
or, you know, people that I really, really, really vehemently disagree with. But, you know, that is, I guess it's, you got to try.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We gotta. My friend Oakley does a really good job at when she finds somebody she disagrees with, just trying to have a conversation with them without vehemently trying to like push her own point of view.
Yeah.
But really trying to understand.
Yeah.
What it is that brings
totally.
Them to think the way that they do.
Yeah.
And then you can hope from that after you listening, maybe they would see, it goes back to what we were talking about in the beginning, seeing human beings as human beings.
Totally.
Instead of one point of view versus the other.
Yeah.
And like, maybe we all have something in common.
Yeah.
That when we encounter each other, we aren't all up in arms. We're not all cats and dogs, you know?
We're not all cats and dogs. Some of us are dogs with a little bit of cat in us. Some of us are cats with a little bit of dog in us.
Yeah.
You know? And then some of us are cats and dogs that have neither dog or cat in us.
Yeah, they're fish.
And that's okay. And that's okay. Absolutely. Yeah, I agree. I was at Bird's last night having a cocktail or two mm-hmm. with some friends. And we were having this discussion, you know, amongst friends, this private discussion about like, you know, politics and, you know, that sort of stuff. And specifically, we were talking about, and I was saying that I think to become president, you have to have like a little bit of narcissism in you
yeah.
to become a president.
Yeah.
And this girl, I guess, from the table over, her and her friends were eavesdropping, but I think they were a little bit drunk and didn't get the whole gist of the conversation.
Right.
And this girl comes over and she gets in my face and she was like, you're a fucking Donald Trump supporter.
Oh,
just
man.
Admit it. You're a fucking Donald Trump supporter. Be a man. And I was like, look, I'm sorry. I think like, and obviously I was like, what the fuck is happening right now?
Yeah. Like an SNL character.
I know. And I had to be like, look, but that's the whole thing is like,
mm-hmm.
she didn't even see me as a human.
Yeah.
First of all, I'm not a Donald Trump supporter.
Right.
I couldn't be further from that.
Yeah.
And I tried to tell her, like, look, I think that you've eavesdropped and confused yourself on what we're talking about. Please, by all means, join the conversation
yeah.
if you like. But, you know, don't it's, even if I were a Donald Trump supporter, that's how you're going to come at me? That's how you want to start a dialogue? Is getting in my face and pointing your finger and saying that I'm a Donald Trump supporter and fuck me and all this stuff? Right. And I was like, I mean, like, that, I don't think that that works.
No, it doesn't. Because say you were, then you, then that creates a thing where you're like, fucking liberals.
Yeah,
just
for
trying to have a conversation in the bar with my friends.
Totally.
Now we can, and you're
But meanwhile, I am a fucking liberal.
Right.
Right? I am a fucking snowflake progressive cuck.
Yeah.
And another liberal is attacking me.
Right.
And I'm like, what are you doing? What are you doing? Yeah. Come on, liberals. What are we doing?
Stop yelling.
You're being so annoying, liberals. So fucking annoying.
Stop yelling.
Yeah.
That the just as a quick side note, the president narcissism thing, that's a really interesting thought. I could talk about that in a whole different thing. Because I was a huge Bernie Sanders supporter.
Me too.
And people are like, well, what's his, one of my friends asked me, like, well, what is his biggest flaw? Like, big thing. And I was thinking about that. I was like, well, I think he is a freaking unicorn of a person, but there is something still, there's some sort of personal ego that makes you be like, I
absolutely
can lead this country.
There's some self aggrandization that has to happen.
Yeah.
For you, you have to be willing to go in front of millions of people and go, trust me, guys, I got this shit. Right? Follow me, vote for me, give me money. I got this shit.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't feel comfortable enough doing that to order a pizza for people at a party. You know what I mean? So I think that, but I'm not saying that like politicians.
James, you ordered the wrong kind of pizza.
I told you I'm not the person to do that. But I'm happy I got what I wanted.
Yeah.
Yeah, but even Bernie Sanders, I feel like, has a little bit of narcissism. Mm-hmm. You have to.
You have to.
And that doesn't mean the person is a narcissist.
No.
Or, like, has narcissistic personality disorder.
Yeah.
But there's a little bit of narcissism in there, you know? Yeah. There's a little bit of narcissism to being a comedian. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, girl from the bar, I hope you're listening so that we clarified for you.
Yeah. And girl from the bar, just be nicer.
Don't you?
Just be nicer. Don't, like, what are you doing? Because now, as a liberal, now I'm like, God, I hate liberals.
Yeah.
You know?
Yelling at everybody.
Yeah.
But then that goes to that empathy thing. You're like, why did she feel the need to yell at somebody random at a bar in order to feel heard? Like, what is happening in her life?
Totally.
That she needs to do that to be validated.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Let's find her. Let's go find her.
Let's find her. Yeah. Let's find her and let's give her a hug.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe she's just a lizard who's actually a dog. Well, thank you so much, James.
Thanks for having me, Hannah.
Afternoon.
This has been great. Yeah, this is great. Thanks for letting me also sit here and play with your cat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He loves it. He is shedding so much. And James is covered in a nest of
cat. Sure am. I sure am,
I'm
but
so
that's
glad
okay.
You're not allergic.
No, I'm all good.
Good news later, everybody.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. Bye bye.
This has been a Boardwalk Audio podcast. For more information and shows, visit boardwalkaudio.com. Don't forget to rate and subscribe now.